Aubrey Masango on 702.
For the curious, streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Ilani Becker joins me now, an Ayurvedic practitioner and owner at Oh My Soul Yoga Veda. Ilani, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Hi, Aubrey. Good evening, listeners. It's such a privilege to be on your show again tonight. Thank you for having me.
So I thought this was an excellent topic, and I thought let's open up the lines. I'd love to hear from our listeners who are eating very healthily, and I suppose it's all got to do with wanting to be to live a healthy and well lifestyle. But some of the food, the healthy eating your topic suggests, are causing you to gain weight.
Yes, so we've had a previous conversation about how the foods that we perceive are healthy can sometimes be detrimental to certain individuals because of their digestive capacity.
Yes.
But today I want to talk about the habits that we are conditioned or taught in our culture and by our people who are the ones who educate us in health.
Yes.
The habits that we are taught that are supposed to be promoting health that in fact can be causing a lot of dangerous situations in our physiology. And one of those habits specifically that I wanted to talk about is the whole notion of these many small meals during the day. So I know that there's a large audience out there who's in the fitness community or who has read up on healthy living. And we very often get advised to have 5 or 6 small meals a day.
Yes.
Or even snack every 2 hours. Is that something that you're familiar with, Aubrey? Have you heard of this?
Yes, I have. I have heard of that. I've been told that that is, in fact, the way to eat, not to have large, you know, servings of food, rather go throughout the day, you know, nibbling out and snacking. That's what I've been told.
Yes, grazing. It's very much a notion that has come to our attention in our modern society. And where this comes from is because as a Western society, us here in South Africa, we're very familiar with it in Europe, especially in the USA, we have this obesity and even diabetes pandemic raging at the moment.
Yes.
And so what has happened and what has transpired from this weight mismanagement pandemic is that as a culture, we have basically been put on a hypoglycemic diet. Hypoglycemia, short and sweet, is when the blood sugar spikes and falls drastically within an individual.
Yes.
It's not our normal physiology. This is a condition that develops over time, and it is something that needs medical attention and care.
Mm.
But as a society, because we have these weight issues, sugar diabetes issues, as a whole, we have been advised to all follow a hypoglycemic type of a diet.
Yes.
So if you pick up any sort of a medical textbook or a journal, the recommendation to manage hypoglycemia, the severe spiking and falling of blood sugar, is to have small meals and snacks, nutritious snacks during the day to keep the blood sugar stable and to keep the body full of energy. So that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about, is the fact that this hypoglycemia is not something that everybody is born with.
Mm.
In fact, as a race, in our evolution, we have evolved to eat very rarely and infrequently. It was hard for humans to find food. So yes, I'm talking about our evolution now. But even as recently as 100 or even 50 years ago, we didn't eat 5-6 times a day. We had our early breakfast. The kids walked 60 kilometers through the snow to school. You know the story.
Yes.
So I went out of the house early in the mornings. We had our breakfast. Sometimes people went for an entire day without, you know, eating during the day. Maybe you had a little snack in the afternoon. And then you would have your substantial dinner again at night. Much longer before that, thousands of years ago, it was even more the case where people had to grow their own food or hunt their own food, where you would have your meal, and the body has this amazing ability to store fat and also to use fat as a slow-burning, sustainable fuel.
Yeah.
It's a gentle energy, it's a slow energy, it's a sustainable energy. It's one of the fuels that we can burn. We can burn sugars and carbohydrates, or we can burn fat. We burn our sugars and carbs quickly because they burn easily. It's a quick fuel source for the body. And fat is the slow release, harder to digest, harder to break down, sustainable fuel. That is the fuel that gives us the stable moods, that gives us the good night's sleep, where the sugar and carbs is the fuel that energizes and give us the ability to have quick bursts of energy and to do things very quickly. So now what's happened in our culture is that we have been taught that we should all be grazing throughout the day like a person who has an actual condition of hypoglycemia.
Yes.
And if we do not have this actual condition, we can actually kind of cause it within our own bodies with this constant grazing.
Mm.
Because now we are training our body, our fat-burning machine, that food is around every corner, that we don't have to access the fat. And if, you know, that old thing about if you use it, what, use it or lose it?
Yes.
If you don't use your body's innate natural ability to access fat stores and break them down, it sort of gets lazy and we get cravings, we get constant hunger. I hear it all the time from people who say that they had these sugar crashes and highs and lows. And ideally, it's a great short-term treatment. Absolutely. For a hypoglycemic person, that is what that person should do, is to have a few meals throughout the day.
Yes.
But then as the blood sugar stabilizes, we want that person to dial it back again to 4 meals a day, 3 meals or 2 meals a day, so that the body can get conditioned back into fat-burning mode. But now we constantly graze, even when we're healthy, because that's what we're taught to do. The body loses its ability to effectively burn fat. Well, doesn't lose it, but dials it down quite drastically.
Yeah.
And we end up having our moods correlate the sugar digestion of the body. Mood up, mood down, sugar up, sugar down. And this becomes our cycle during the day, also during the night. We've had a couple of discussions around sleep and insomnia. So if you think about, like I was saying, when we are a previous generation, I even remember it from my childhood, was that we had our breakfast in the school in the mornings, went to school, had a day at sports, and then we would come back to dinner in the evenings. And when we eat like that, what happens in the body is that it will digest our meal, access the energy that is readily available from the meal.
Mm.
And when that has burned and the body is done using that energy and it needs more energy,
yep,
it will automatically access the fat stores. And that is what we want to do, because in our fat stores, we have undigested chemicals from our food and from the air. We have obviously excess calories. We even have molecules of emotion. And all of this gets processed by the body. In the burning process, the excess waste products that get released, like a car's engine, you know, you burn the petrol for the car to run, and the exhaust fuel is the waste product that comes out. That happens in the body.
Before you continue, Lani, I want you to, if you can, explain to me the whole idea behind 3 square meals a day. Is it in any way connected to this whole idea that we should be eating throughout the day? And has the 3 meals a day story does it have any connection to the hypoglycemic issue that you raised today?
Well, let me address this from an Ayurvedic point of view.
Yep.
In Ayurveda in India, there's actually a saying that says 1 meal a day is for the yogi. A yogi, in the language context, is considered a healthy person, an enlightened person, a person in connection with their body, mind, spirit.
Right.
2 meals a day is for the bogey. A bogey is considered a lower class person who doesn't really have access to health, a person who's generally not as healthy as they could be. And 3 meals a day is for the rogi. A rogi is what we call a very sick person, a practically dead person.
Yes.
It's what we call our patient. in Ayurveda.
Yes.
So two or three meals a day is good. That gives the body the chance to access the meal, let's say breakfast at 6 or 7 o'clock,
yes,
digest it, the food leaves the stomach and it goes through the process of assimilation in the gut.
Yes.
Then we only have our next meal roughly 5 hours later is ideal. 5 to 6 hours later is great. But now what we're doing as a society is we'll have a breakfast and then we'll have a snack, a carrot or an apple or, you know, a healthy thing, nuts, seeds. It's healthy snacks. But by doing that, we are preventing the body from accessing fat stores. We have it because it has a constant stream of energy, of nutrients and calories coming in.
Yeah.
So it has no need to access the fat stores. So two or three meals a day is great. There's definitely merit in that. I'm not saying eat any less than that.
Yeah.
But the constant grazing prevents us from accessing the fat stores. And it's essential for us to burn the fat stores because they contain what we also spoke about in our previous talks, the toxicity,
yes,
in the body. If we don't burn the toxins, they just stay in the body and accumulate. And we start getting the fibromyalgia, the depression and mood swings, bipolar disorder, a whole plethora of things. But I can hear that you've got something that you want,
sure,
to
ask. Sure. 011-883-0702. I want to invite our guests, our listeners, to be part of this conversation, Alani, because I think that doctrine of piercing throughout the day, snacking throughout the day, mm-hmm, is deeply entrenched. And for, I suppose, as you said, that for hypoglycemic people, it makes absolute sense. But it has become a mainstream way of understanding food, eating, and nutrition. And you're saying to us that perhaps we need to take a second look at all of this. And you're suggesting that even if it is healthy food, so you're not even saying that, what do they call the food that aren't healthy? There's a name for it these days.
Junk food.
You're saying even if it isn't junk food, even if it's healthy food, we need to rethink the idea of eating throughout the whole day. Give us a call, 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567 is the number to dial. I would have imagined that if I am going to, snack on a carrot or something like that throughout the day, that the nutrients of a carrot aren't such that they are stored in the body in a way that would increase the fat. Or are you saying to me that maybe the problem is not with the carrot, it's with the fact that the storage of fat that occurs naturally in the body is not being used for what it's intended for? Is that what I'm hearing, Lani?
Yes, that is what I'm getting at, is that it's essential for our bodies to burn the stored fat. It's highly unlikely that you're going to store fat or gain fat from a carrot. It doesn't contain any fat and it doesn't have a whole lot of calories in it.
Yeah.
But what we're doing with our bodies by constantly grazing is by constantly adding, because what do we graze? We graze crackers and fruit. It is things that push the blood sugar up. And by having this constant bombardment of sugar on the cells get overwhelmed and eventually they're going to tell the body, whoa, I cannot take any more sugar.
Yes.
And that is when the cell becomes insulin resistant, type 2 diabetes. So it's entirely possible to develop type. We tend to think of diabetes as something that comes from sugar and, you know, unhealthy food.
Yeah.
But it can, in fact, also be triggered by not using the body's natural process in which it has evolved to digest fat, toxins, energy, access to fat stores, by overwhelming ourselves with this constant sugar, even in the healthy form of a fruit, to make the body non-responsive to insulin.
So give me a call if that is how you've lived and that is how. But what about people, Alani, who are athletes, for example, who are not hypoglycemic, but who are athletes, people that are working out twice a day, for example, that would need to replenish the used energy in a workout? What do you say to them?
Well, the clever people who have all the fancy products that cost us a whole lot of money will try to convince us that we need to take all sorts of supplements. But the formula is really very simple. If you're burning more calories, eat more calories. So if you're an extremely active person, you work out, you gym, you burn a lot of your energy, you're going to have to consume more energy. Mm. But the ideal way to do it then would be to have a substantial, nutrient-dense breakfast. Mm. Do your workout, go about your day, and have a substantial, nutrient-dense lunch that will get you through to dinner without getting hungry and needing a snack.
Yeah.
So what we're now doing is instead of having a full breakfast that fills us up, satisfies us, and lasts us until lunch, we try to ration ourselves because that's what we're taught to do.
Yes.
Just have two boiled eggs and an apple for breakfast. I'm going to be very harsh and cruel now. That's not breakfast. You want to eat? Who can live on this?
Yeah.
You want to have a proper, proper breakfast that can see you through for 5 or 6 hours in your most active time of the day.
Yes.
You want to have a substantial lunch. You should ideally strive to have your lunch between 11 and 1. 12 o'clock is more or less the best time for you to have lunch.
Yes.
And that should also ideally, if it's at all possible, be your largest meal of the day, because that is the time that your metabolism is at its fastest and that your fat burning capacity is at its highest. Your digestion is at its strongest at
yes.
noon.
Yes.
And you want to have a full lunch, eat until you are satisfied so that you can go to dinner. But we're breaking up our meals into a tiny little breakfast and then a yogurt and a fruit snack. And then lunch, a cracker with some tuna on. You know, we have these little mini meals. So you can even, they've done a study, and I forgot the journal's name now. They've actually done studies where they've had two groups and given them exactly the same amount of calories in yes. a day. But for the one group, they split it up into 6 small portions. And for the second group, they gave it in 3 substantial portions, same calories, same food. And the bodies responded dramatically differently.
John is in Craig Hall Park. Hi, John.
Hi, Aubrey and Lonnie.
Yeah, go ahead.
Lonnie, I'd like to ask, please, we share 99% of our DNA with chimpanzees.
Yeah.
And 94% of our DNA we share with baboons. Those primates snack all day long. And if you evolved from a common ancestor at some point, wherein lies the difference then between us having such a bad reaction to snacking all day long and the other two primates to whom we're closely related don't seem to have that same problem?
I really had a very hard time hearing the question.
We and some of the other primates, like chimpanzees and baboons, share so much in terms of our genetic material, and they seem to be eating throughout the day in the way that you've been describing. Shouldn't that be good for us too? I mean, they snack throughout the day in the way that you seem to be suggesting we should be reviewing. John, am I on the right track?
Yeah, that's exactly the right question. Should I listen on the radio?
Sure, go ahead. Thanks very much for your call, John.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. That is an excellent, excellent question and a very valid one at that.
Yeah.
So if you think of you're 100% correct. We do share a good DNA profile with our primate friends.
Yep.
But look at their activities during a day. Mm. What does a primate do during the course of a day? They're up in the trees, they're foraging, they're looking for their food. They are active all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So they need that constant stream of energy to maintain the constant activity. And when they do settle down and sit down and get calm for the night, they stop eating. While we were living in Belito, you visited us there.
Yeah.
So when we were living there, we had such a wonderful opportunity to really almost study the vervet monkeys that lived so
close. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, yeah.
Yes, I've had my little troop, my friends, and I had a picnic with them every afternoon.
Yeah.
But we would see them coming down our wall between 4 and 5 o'clock every day, punctually, in their little pecking order. And they would have their last foodies, and then they would settle down for the night and not eat again at all until the next morning. So the whole day they are active. They need that constant stream of energy. Us as human beings, thank goodness, we do not have to swing from the branches and jump from wall to wall and rooftop to rooftop, carrying our 10-ton children on our backs all day, every day.
Yeah.
The majority of us spend a lot of time sitting down, being sedentary, doing low energy work in front of a computer. So we are not constantly expending energy.
Yeah.
We're expending energy in the mornings when we're getting the kids ready for school, and then we're expending energy stressing in traffic. But then we get to the office and we sit at the desk. The metabolism slows down, the digestive process slows down because we are not busy and active. So for us, the same formula just simply isn't effective.
Lani, it appears to me that your approach is almost one that says, let the diet of a person be fit for purpose. In other words, the idea that we have to have a one-size-fits-all kind of diet. If you are a banting person, then all of us need to be banting. If you are, you know, if you understand what I'm trying to say. It appears to me that, I don't know whether that is an Alani Beckett sort of doctrine or an Ayurvedic doctrine, but it appears to me that you are suggesting that we should find ways of eating and nutrition that is customized to the lifestyle that we live. Because I was going to ask you the question, what then is the right way to eat? Is it a big thing of pap and mohodu, which I love to eat, or what is the right thing? But I've got a funny feeling you're going to say that you need to customize your eating habits and your nutrition to the kind of lifestyle that you lead.
You have been listening in class. I am very chuffed with it.
I'm gonna get that star, hey, Lani.
You're gonna get a gold star, an extra gold star, and a smiley face. You are absolutely spot on with that. And that's not an Ilani Beckett thing. That is very much an Ayurvedic thing, and that is why Ayurveda resonates with me so deeply, and why, you know, I just had to make it my life and my purpose and everything, is because the whole concept of Ayurveda is that one size fits all is a doctrine that just does not work for most people. We've all seen it. Some people thrive on a banting diet. Other people, like me, I tried it some years ago, just balloon on a banting diet. Some people thrive on low-fat, high-carb. And others just don't, maybe because of gluten intolerance or whatever the case may be. But absolutely, we need to be aware of our bodies, preferably if we can have a professional assist us in diagnosing and assessing what is ideal for our individual bodies, we can get the best results. And like I said, yes, I'm saying that ideally 2 to 3 substantial meals a day is how we have evolved. But then again, also evolution is a thing that played a major role, but we have our modern society.
Yeah.
We all have our lives and the things that have happened in our lives. And we are not in perfect health. Mm-hmm. Some of us are hypoglycemic, in which case, absolutely, you should be eating every 2 or 3 hours. So you're spot on it. It has to be a custom type of a thing. So I'm giving you a general, broad idea. For the majority, even people who are now used to and conditioned to eating these small meals throughout the day, they'll tell you, and I know this from experience because I think 4 or 5 years ago or so, I was on a bodybuilding regime as well, believe it or not. It was not my thing. Definitely not my thing. So, but there, I also had to have 5 or 6 small meals a day. And in the beginning, I loved it because I felt, okay, I'm never hungry. My mood feels stable. But a couple of months later, I started noticing that I felt hungry all the time. I was still eating every 2 or 3 hours, but now suddenly I was hungry even between those meals.
Yes.
Because my body had dialed back its ability to prolong my energy, to sustain my energy. And that's what happens to so many people who go on this healthy recommendation of eating these small regular meals. But for some people, it's necessary. So you're spot on there. It is definitely a personal thing.
If it were
possible,
if it were possible that we could hop back to a less Ayurvedic, a conscious conversation about nutrition, Ilani, and we were speaking in general terms, we were trying to standardize, as it were, what would the ideal meal be for a lifestyle that is largely sedentary, as you've said, because we sit in front of computers most of the time. We don't hunt like we used to do and run after animals like we used to do in our earlier stages as a human race. What would a more sedentary lifestyle under lockdown and all of those modern realities look like from an Ayurvedic perspective, Alani?
We can marry Ayurveda to Western medicine here with that little go-to slogan, energy in, energy out. So it is a question of becoming aware and conscious of your own body and your energy expenditures throughout the day.
Yeah.
So ideally, we need to assess firstly where we are right now. Another thing about our culture is that we tend to want a quick fix and think, oh, I heard a new thing. Yay, let me try this. And yeah, a week later, we don't love it. And then, oh, no, it's not working. Our bodies don't work like that. It takes time for us to build a habit, weeks, months even.
Yes.
So we firstly need to become aware of our current eating habits and then see if we can, if we have a weight issue, because I specialize in weight loss,
yeah,
so this is my area, we first have to assess what are you currently doing that is causing the weight gain or the prevention of weight loss, and then start thinking, how can we get that back into balance? Is the person eating food that is too high in calories, so food containing a lot of oils, fats, you know, that sort of thing?
Yes.
Or is the person simply eating too frequently, not able to access their fat stores? A short and sweet go-to that will work for a large number of people, but not for everybody, because remember, we look at those constitutions, and some people have the fire constitution.
Yes.
They get hangry. So this will, for instance, not work very well for that kind of person.
Yeah.
But for two-thirds of humanity, occasional intermittent fasting does tend to do the trick when we have a sedentary lifestyle. And what that simply means is having 14 to 16 hours between your last meal of the day and your first meal of the next day. For some people, it works then to have dinner really early at around 4 o'clock.
Yes.
And then have their breakfast early-ish the next day. For other people, it works better to have a little bit of a later dinner, 6 or 7 o'clock, but then only have their breakfast at 10 or 11 o'clock. And that extra stretch beyond 12 hours gives the body a huge boost in accessing the fat stores.
Yes.
That means a more constant mood, a more constant energy burning, burning off of excess calories, and also burning off of toxins that have accumulated through our lives.
Our conversations, Alani, have made me more aware of the relationship between what we eat and therefore our nutrition and our mood and mm-hmm. maybe even our cognitive functions. That
right.
the better we eat at the right times and the right kinds of food for the kind of constitution you have and so forth. I mean, you've given us the Ayurvedic sort of names for what was that life force name? I think it was Prana. I think you called it.
Yeah, Prana is the life force. The
go.
Different constitutions we were calling Vata, Pitta, and Kapha.
I see. Now,
yes.
my thing is, I'm beginning to understand that eating food, nutrition, isn't just about being able to have a full stomach. It has all sorts of other ramifications. It's got to do with the levels of cognitive abilities that you can develop, the ability to concentrate, the ability to understand complex content sometimes has to do with the way we eat or not, right? What should the approach be for somebody like me who's been eating mainly for just, you know, survivalist sort of eating? I'm, you know, eating so that my stomach is full and so I can go do the next project or do. What should the holistic mindset be that says, from today, I need to start thinking this way about how I eat in order to achieve, I don't know, the ability to read 3 books a day or whatever goal I have?
Okay, so what we need to understand is that every process that the body undergoes during a day requires energy. If we are eating food that is hard to digest, it will require a large amount of our energy and our body's reserve and our mind's reserve, obviously, goes into digesting a meal And that is a mistake that we make very often in our Western culture. Mm. It's food combining. Mm. That's a thing that we're also very focused on in Ayurveda, is the compatibility of food. For instance, a thing that's very common and very popular as a breakfast is something like a smoothie, which will usually contain fruit and milk, sometimes yes. things like nuts and seeds. Yeah. Now, what we know through Ayurveda is that dairy and fruit are extremely hard to digest together. So that makes it, and you know, we don't know these things because what do we see on the shelves in the shops? We see yogurt that is fruit flavored.
Yeah.
We have so many recipes that we have access to. That's for smoothies and things. That's dairy and a fruit.
Yes.
Other things like beans and cheese, extremely hard together to digest.
Yes.
Potatoes and beans, the body really struggles to digest those. So even if you have a relatively simple meal, you're not overeating. But if you're combining foods that do not, call it, talk to each other, foods that do not speak the same language, they're going to pull in opposite directions using a huge amount of energy.
Can you give me an example of that?
Down in the body.
Give me an example of foods that don't talk to each other.
Beans and cheese, potatoes and beans. Cheese basically doesn't talk to anything.
Right.
Anytime you have dairy, the rule of thumb is have it on its own. Dairy doesn't tend to go well with very many things. Dairy goes okay with grains. But dairy and fruit, dairy and meat, they just do not digest very well together. Fruit as well. Fruit, raw fruit, does not digest well with other food. Why? Because it digests very quickly.
Yes.
Easy to digest fruit like a nachi or an orange or a thing can leave your stomach anywhere between 20 and 40 minutes later. So if you have a fruit with something like a meat that can take up to 2 or 3 hours to digest, you'll have everything in a mixture in your stomach, and while this meat is going through the digestive system slowly, the fruit basically ferments and rots because it's done digesting. And that, in turn, triggers more toxic buildup, more acidity in the body. Acidity leads to inflammation, leads to free radicals, leads to all of these issues that can trigger our cancer cells, and, you know, that's the short version of a very complicated yes. chemical process.
So we're talking about intelligent eating, myself and Ilani Beckett. And it's clear to me, Ilani, that it's no longer just a matter of just, you know, eat. Just eat. It's becoming clearer to me as we have these conversations that we've got to eat more intelligently, more, what's the word that I'm looking for? In a more mindful way. We need a more mindful approach to what we eat and how we eat that food. Talk to me about times of day for what to eat.
Ideally, we want to work with what fits into a person's schedule. So everybody's lives and schedules work differently. But ideally, you want to have your, if you do have breakfast, you want to have your breakfast sometime between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock. That's a good time to have your breakfast. Anytime before 6 o'clock, that is when the mind is nice and clear, the early hours of the morning, we call this the Vata time of day. Remember when we spoke about the body's constitution?
Mm.
Vata is the air and space, the cool, crisp, light and dry, the mobile. So early in the mornings is when we should be doing our spiritual practice, should be setting up our intentions for the day. And then if we can do a breakfast somewhere between 6 and 8 o'clock, that's fantastic. But also then alongside that, 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock is, again, the kapha time of the day, which is the slower, you know, the body systems are sort of dialed down.
Mm.
So having a nice active workout during that time will really kickstart your fat-burning process. Your pitta time of the day, the fire time of the day, just like our body has a fire constitution,
yes.
is between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Yes.
So that is the ideal time of the day to have your largest meal.
Yes.
You want your largest meal or your afternoon meal at least 5 hours after breakfast. That gives the breakfast enough time to leave the stomach to get into the digestive tract, for the blood sugar to go up, if it's going to go up, and to start leveling down again without having a severe drop.
Mm.
Now, if you're a person used to eating 5 or 6 meals a day, you're going to feel absolutely dreadful if you start tomorrow eating 2 or 3 meals a day.
Yes.
You're going to have to retrain your body to say, okay, I'm used to having 6 a day. Let me make it 5 a day for the next 3 weeks and spread it out a little bit further. Then make it 4 a day for 3 weeks, spread it out even further until you've reconditioned yourself. So ideally, rather than giving you specific times for meals, because everybody, some people work night shift, you know, our schedules are different with dropping kids off at school,
yes,
different times at lunch is, you know, your break at work. So ideally, I'd rather say 5 to 6 hours between meals. So whatever time you have your breakfast, have your lunch 5 or 6 hours later. Aim to have your dinner before 7 o'clock. If you can have it before 6 o'clock, even better.
Why?
Because from 6 o'clock in the evening, we start going into the kapha time of the evening again, where everything slows down.
Yeah.
So the digestion slows down, the body cools down, and the body wants to get ready for bed. So now if we throw a whole heavy meal onto this digestive fire of ours, the body is told again, okay, we cannot rest now. Something is happening. We need to be awake to digest this heavy meal. And that keeps us up at night. So the later you eat, the more you're going to struggle to sleep. The heavier your meal, the more you're going to struggle to eat. Once again, dependent on constitution. Some people, like the people we spoke about earlier with a fire constitution, those who get hangry if they skip a meal, they're okay. They can digest basically anything at any time of the day. But even them, because they're the ones who will get heartburn if they eat too late, if the food lies heavily in the stomach. We want the body to be able to rest at night. We do digest at night as well, but what we're actually doing more is assimilating. The food that has now already gone through the process of breaking down in the stomach goes into the gut where the nutrients are extracted. And in Ayurveda, what we also taught is that the digestion of the non-food molecules happens during the night between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., just like in the morning.
Yeah.
You have your 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. for lunchtime when your actual digestion is strongest.
Yes.
In the night between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., the digestion of the non-food molecules, the molecules of emotion, the mental digestion of the day's events, that happens at that time of the night. And if we overwhelm the digestion with actual food, the breaking down of the chemicals, the toxic buildup, the emotions, the processing of the day, the thoughts, that cannot happen effectively. And that is when it starts impacting on our minds, on our mood, the thing that you were speaking about earlier.
Ilani, I'll never look at a plate of food the same way again, man, after this.
Change your thinking, change your results.
Absolutely. 011-883-0702. Are you perhaps having the kinds of epiphanies that I'm having with regards to food? What's your relationship with food been, I suppose, up until now? Have you made the connection, as I seem to be making slowly but surely, that it's not just about grazing. it connects to so many other elements, other aspects of your life. You know, Ilani, I used to think that people that would have these kinds of conversations were really pretentious. Because for me, you know, you eat because you're hungry, bro. I mean, what's your problem? But as I've grown older, and the more I've had these kinds of conversations with people that are studying and thinking about these kinds of things, I begin to realize that everything is so connected. Even that popsicle that you had at 2 o'clock in the morning, Aubrey, after coming from work, is connected to how you then feel and think and approach people, and the whole day can be affected simply by a moment of not being mindful about what you put into your mouth. It can mess up all sorts of different things. How you relate to your partner, how you relate to your children can be attributed to that popsicle that you thought, ah, man, I can eat this thing. So it's very, very important.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you were saying, what you eat is also when you eat. But what we know from our studies and the 5,000 years of Ayurveda, that the Ayurvedic science and knowledge that we've gathered, is that the different foods with different tastes get assimilated in different ways and at a different speed over a different period of time throughout up to 30 days, sometimes 32 days, things with a bitter taste, they take the longest to get fully assimilated into the tissues and ultimately work on the reproductive tissues. The reproductive tissues are the tissues that get the attention the last. They get the final product, the purest essence of the food.
Yeah.
First, it goes into the gross body, the muscles, the fat cells, you know, the gross tissue, if I can call it like that.
Yeah.
And the further the food breaks down over the course of even 30 days, the more subtle the effect of the food gets. That's why I will tell practically every single person that I speak to who comes to me for a consult, I'll give you instruction to journal just lightly, nothing hectic. Make notes of what you ate, what time you ate it, what mood were you in, what happened in the day. Simple little notes. Because once we start establishing what we eat and when, not only do we normally realize that we eat way more than we think we eat, there's the first trap, but we also can start seeing patterns. On days that I had more processed food, like clockwork, 2 days later, I had a depressive spell, something like that.
I had an irrational argument with somebody, or you know, I'm beginning to see those patterns, and they are directly connected to what I eat. Ilani, listen, let me quickly take this call from Dennis and Cyril Dean. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. Yes, thanks.
Yeah.
My first is an observation. The convention is you normally eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince and suffer like a pauper. Well, the breakfast and lunch thing you've reversed. You've even said have a bigger lunch and a smaller breakfast, just an observation. Second thing is, what about just eating when you feel hungry, you know, listening to your body?
Sure.
Yes, I'm absolutely all for that. But what we can, what we do need to pay attention to is that certain foods will trigger those sugar spikes. And when we crash off that sugar high, we might feel hungry at a funny time. So it's one of the things that helps with the things that we spoke about previously, the insomnia and the depression, the mood swings, bowels that don't work the way that they should. One of the easiest and quickest ways to fix that is by establishing a routine. Having your meals within 1 hour, more or less the same hour every day. So if you know I normally have breakfast at 7, have your breakfast between 6:30 and 7:30 every day. You're never going to get so hungry to the point that you feel you're going to pass out if you had trained your body to eat at certain times. But what we do is we like, and I was there, that's why I can say this authentically. I was a huge fan of eat when you're hungry. But then I gave myself, and I'm not saying everybody does this, but what I did was I gave myself permission that the moment I felt the first pang of hunger, I thought, ha, I'm hungry, I can eat now.
Yeah.
And I would go into the nuts and the berries and, you know, healthy stuff.
Yeah.
But so my spaces between my meals got shorter and shorter because when I noticed the first pang of hunger, and sometimes it was an emotional hunger.
Yes.
I would have an argument or an unpleasant conversation with someone over the phone at work. And I'm a comfort eater, unfortunately. It just is what it is. And I would tell myself that I'm hungry. If I'm hungry, I can eat. And so my meals got closer and closer together. So absolutely do eat when you're hungry, but pay attention to the time. Rather, I like advising people to, the sentence I use to death is be where you are, come from a space of observation. So before you start changing anything in your life, don't give yourself an expectation of saying, I should eat 3 times a day at 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 6 o'clock. Rather observe, what am I currently doing?
Yes.
Feel when you're hungry, write it down. Today I'm hungry at this time, this time, this time. And if you do that for a week or so, you'll notice when your hungry times are. And if you are a person who is aware of your body, who has a relatively stable routine, you'll see that when you get hungry, normally falls within an hour time slot. It's because the body is this intelligent chemist that gets trained and then can know, okay, I normally get fed at around 6 o'clock in the morning, so your tummy is going to probably start giving you some rumbles at around 5:30. So absolutely listen to that, but pay attention that you don't fall into the trap of just munching because you're hungry. Watch the time and say, right, I'm close to my lunchtime, but my normal lunchtime is only half an hour away, and wait it out. You'll definitely survive that half an hour. Keep your body trained like a fat-burning furnace, the fat-burning furnace that it is biologically designed to be.
Elani Beckett, it's always great talking to you about food, man. And I really appreciate the fact that it's really making us understand that it's not just about eating. It's about actually making your body, which is a fat-burning furnace, function optimally. How do people get in touch with you? And what is happening next at Oh My Soul?
Yes, absolutely. People can reach me via my website, www.ommysoul, like the mantra, ommysoul.com. Or they can send me a WhatsApp message. I'm not manning the phone at the moment. I practice between 10 and 4. But please send a message to 060-628. Oh, wait, I've never called myself and I forgot my own number. 060-628-6149. Welcome to send a WhatsApp message there or send me an email. You'll find me on social media. And if there's any questions, whenever I'm available, I'm very happy to answer questions.
Elani Beckett, always great talking to you. I think we're not talking next week, but the other week, right?
Yes, correct. Two weeks from now.
Elani Beckett, much appreciated.